Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. Imagine if there were a delightful, wonderfully illustrated storybook that explained the nature of life, the connection of body, mind, and spirit, and the way of finding balance, happiness, and fulfillment. Imagine that this storybook could open your heart and bring you an understanding of how you developed into the person you are and offer insight into who you could become. Imagine that this storybook told a very special story, your story. Your imagination has manifested in reality. My guest this week on Vox Novus, Allison Warden, has written it. Allison Warden has worked as a Gestalt therapist in Harley Street, London, and at the Hale Clinic. She's currently practicing in London, Norfolk, and France. It was while living in France for 2 years in a secluded mountain house that she created the book we have all been imagining, beautifully and whimsically illustrated by her marine biologist son, Ben Warden. Your story brings together the four cornerstones of humanity, the physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional consciousness, so any reader can figure out who they are, why they act as they do, and how they can live their life to the fullest. Through a series of simple stories and metaphors, including fun illustrations by Allison's son, Ben, the mind-boggling intricacies of psychology have been finally simplified in a way that anyone can understand. Her website is AllisonWarden.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her path and her book, Your Story, an illustrated guide to simple psychology and therapy. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Allison Warden. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you so much, Victor. What a very lovely introduction. I'm very appreciative of you.
And thank you for joining us and sharing your story, because that's where it really truly starts with us. Please share with our listeners your early path and how it formed the woman you became.
I think because I had damage at a very early age, and then was so driven by probably everything but probably rationale. So I am guided always by intuition. At that time, I remember when I was just 9 years old, and it was the first time I ever met Richard. So I was this very precocious, naughty little girl, and we were on a beach in East Sussex, and we met. He was older than I was and couldn't understand the attraction to a nine-year-old. I remember sitting on his lap, looking into his eyes and saying, "Richard Warden, I'm going to marry you."
And how old were you? How old were you at the time?
Nine. I was just nine.
Wow.
And when I was 16, Richard and I married. So it was, I know that he and I have a very obvious soul connection. So that was quite profound to know something at such an early age and to not falter. I really believed it. So there was something maybe a little different about me even then at nine. And then when we first were together, it was really about survival. It was about making a living and having lots of adventures. So we did all of that for many years. And then, in fact, it was 5 years later when we had Emma, our daughter, and Ben, our son, a couple of years after that. And so we were kind of a pretty normal kind of family. I don't think I would have I wouldn't have described myself then as a spiritual being. I was absolutely driven by the normal kind of desires and I don't know, just adventure. Yeah, adventure. So then we were together, we had the children. Richard did a business with sunbeds, and in fact became really like the sunbed king in England. And then I can look back and think, yes, it was sad, but maybe it was necessary. He became quite a megalomaniac, not the person that I knew. It sort of turned his head, went his head. And so we then divorced. And again, things are very different, aren't they, in hindsight? At the time, something can be so painful and almost unbearable. But I know now, and I knew probably a couple, it took me a couple of years to really appreciate what was going on. I had deciphered me through his eyes, because he was a bit older, because he was maybe because he was male as well. However he thought of me, that's how I saw myself. And so I was maybe looking for his approval, all stuff that's completely natural as you're growing up, but actually not healthy to stay in that state. And so it took me that severance, that divorce, and then I had two children to look after. But I actually then started having more of a sense of myself, and who I was without actually anybody else's proximity of being. It was me then, and things that perhaps he disapproved of, then other people may have really helped me to grow more into who I really was meant to be.
Let me ask you this. You had obviously had a soulmate relationship. And for those of our listeners who believe in this type of thing, a soulmate relationship, especially what's known as a twin flame soulmate relationship, can be the most beautiful relationship and also the most challenging, because a true twin flame soulmate pushes all of our buttons, don't they?
Absolutely, completely. And I didn't know that it was called that, in fact, Victor. So thank you for that enlightenment. I would say, I mean, Richard and I are so polarized, and I as a team, we're great, and we do definitely prod each other's buttons. We certainly ignite each other's buttons. And then there is something that is way beyond any of that beingness. There is something, and I'm jumping the gun a bit, but wherever, if I were in trouble anywhere, absolutely anywhere, somehow, and this makes me feel quite moved just saying it, Richard would pick that up. He would know. He would know. So, yeah, I'm moved as I say that about our connection.
Absolutely. Why did you choose psychotherapy as your career?
This was then in my years of being a single mom, and I remember going with a Greek girlfriend, Elsa. She's now a professor, in fact, in the States. And she and I, we would go dancing, just having such fun. And then one day we decided, oh, let's do something with our brains. And we went to a whole course of transactional analysis. And I remember about the second week in, I was absolutely smitten. I knew that somehow this really, really touched my buttons. And she was absolutely the other way and said, oh, this is definitely not for me. It's too scary. And from the transactional analysis, we were then, not she, but oh yes, actually she did. She came to Cambridge then to do, she only did a couple of sessions, but we then did the Gestalt, and the Gestalt, we worked with dreams, and it was so raw and so bold. And so what was it that Gestalt did for me? It went straight in there, straight into your being, and really got to the absolute core of who you were. And I was hooked. I just knew this was for me.
Most of our listeners are familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy, neurolinguistic programming, and some of the newer therapeutic techniques. What is Gestalt therapy and how was it developed?
Well, Gestalt was developed, in fact, by Fritz Perls. And what it is, it's about focusing on the now, absolutely in this moment. And if we focus on this moment so that we then have an understanding of then maybe the rhetoric that goes on in our brains, all our rationale, if we're focusing on the now and our feelings, how we feel in this moment and then the next moment, it just changes something. There's a connection that is so deep and real. Somehow our defenses can then just break down. So you have to be, if you're doing Gestalt with a practitioner, there has to be such trust, instead of perhaps the therapist being perhaps aloof or beyond the client. With Gestalt, the therapist has to put their defenses down. And that is huge. So you're meeting somebody already, you're meeting that client from your truth. There's an authenticity in Gestalt that I value. Yeah.
Let's just say I had come to you for a Gestalt session. Just describe what it would be like.
Well, I would say, Victor, how lovely. I wish I could see you. I can hear you. So that's a new one, because I would like to see you. I'd like to see your eyes. And then I would ask you why you're here, Victor. And you would tell me, and I would then say, what actually, Victor, are you experiencing? What are you feeling in this moment? And so many people will start off by saying something like, well, you this and you that. No, bring it back to I. And even just to do that, to start saying I, instead of one removed, I. And then to actually meet this person in this authenticity, in this deep, deep place. And first of all, it can be really too scary. And I would then, as the therapist, I would then acknowledge that and then say, and what in this moment, what do you feel? What do you need from me? If you're telling me how you're feeling, I don't know. How are you feeling actually right now, Victor? What are you feeling?
I'm feeling very relaxed and comfortable and thoroughly enjoying our conversation.
Oh, I'm so pleased. So I'm aware, listening to you, you have a very, very clever, clever brain. That's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing you've got lots of learning, lots of stuff. Then if I ask you to come away from your brain, and you're sitting, I know, in your study, in your office. And then if I ask you to be aware of your breathing.
My breathing right now is calm and relaxed.
And I'm very interested, because you're probably a bit more calm and relaxed actually than I am. I'm much happier to be able to see you, and because I don't know, you're more in your comfort zone. I love this. So you're more in your comfort zone than I am. So as the therapist, that's normally the other way round.
Mm. You had mentioned in your introduction, in our introduction rather, that you were intuitive and actually called yourself an empath, which many of our listeners are empaths or empathic. Does that cause a challenge for you in the process of your work, or is it a benefit? In other words, is it a blessing or a curse or a combination of the two?
I would say in my book, it's adamantly, definitely, and completely so good. It's so valuable. In everyday life, it's sometimes more difficult, more harrowing, because I can pick things up from, say, strangers in a supermarket, I've been known to go to a complete stranger in a supermarket and ask permission, but would say to somebody, I know that, would you mind? would you mind? I just want to hold you. I know that you're in pain. And I haven't ever yet been turned away. I've always been received. So I feel moved and touched as I tell you that. That happens so many times that I can just pick up people's feelings, which is wonderful if they're happy and joyful. That's beautiful. Children especially, that's beautiful. And there are people who are obviously, you know, life is painful and there are real losses and tragedies that we all have to suffer. So I will pick up on that. I think the most difficult for me is being so sensitive, probably to sounds. So if I could stop that, then I probably would choose to. I don't like noisy things. So that's probably makes me a pain probably to live with, I would think.
As I'd mentioned, many of our listeners experience empathy or are actually empaths. And for some of them, it can be a challenge, especially when they're absorbing the energy of someone who's in a bad way or someone who's an energy vampire who draws energy from you. How do you protect yourself in a situation like that?
I think when I've worked and I've been aware of, I can think of a few clients like that, and then I will talk about it. I will say I'm experiencing a real drain of my energy and I want to know, what is it? Are you aware of what you are doing? And I want you just to be aware that this is uncomfortable for me. And there has been a time where I've actually had to say, I'm not going to work anymore with you.
Wow.
So, yeah, not easy. But if it depends if somebody is willing to hear that and really take it in, not as a put down. I would say it more about, this is how it is for me. So I'm being responsible for me, so that I'm not blaming somebody else. I don't believe in people blaming other people. It's like, this is my life. I'm responsible for it. I'm responsible for attracting this person and that person. And each person, I believe, is going to help me to grow in some way. But if somebody is really making me poorly, then I would have to say, I'm not prepared. I will send you to somebody else. But for me, this isn't working. I would not do it in any way to be unkind or cruel. But actually, the moment that it's mentioned, then some kind of energy shift, something changes. And that's really, I just think so many people sadly do not take responsibility for themselves, for their actions, if somebody said to me, you're stealing my energy, Alison, yes, I would be horrified, but I would want to look at what I do, because I wouldn't want to go around doing that. You've got to be quite, I don't know about advanced, but you've got to be quite open to hear something as difficult as that. I mean, it's lovely to absorb all lovely things. Oh, you're so lovely, Victor. You're so lovely, Alison. But to hear something that, you know, somebody's saying, perhaps, I mean, I've sat and said to people, look, I really am unhappy saying this. I do not want to be saying this. But actually, there isn't one thing that I like about it. I can't like you. What is it that you're doing that's stopping me from liking you? And then that person will probably say, oh, nobody likes me, but I want to like you. What is it that you're doing? How is it that you're stopping me from liking you? And to be that authentic, to be that honest, has huge, if it's done with the right intent. If you're doing it as a put down or to be unkind, then it's cruel. But if you're doing it so that, if you're saying, I really want to like you. I haven't had this experience with lots of many, many people or clients. Why? What is it that you're doing? And then that person has to then look at who they are and how they're stopping people from actually liking them.
And from a standpoint of many of us establishing boundaries, consciously establishing boundaries, and also understanding that the word no is a complete sentence is so valuable and such a great tool. We'll be talking more about that in our next segment. My guest is Allison Warden. We're talking about her book, Your Story. Allison, please share with our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and this amazing work.
Thank you, Victor. My book, Your Story, if you go to my website, which is alisonwarden.com, and then I am very happy to send you a copy.
Wonderful. And we'll be back with more of Allison Warden and Your Story after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. They can help save lives by not having playdates. That's right. By replacing get-togethers with virtual playdates and video chats, they can help slow the evil spread of germs. And if your superheroes do go outside, make sure they continue their superhero wing by staying 6 feet away from others to protect everyone in America land. Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Allison Warden. We're talking about her book, Your Story. So what happened after you and Richard divorced? You had mentioned going to school and becoming a therapist. What else started happening for you?
Well, the first thing I did, because I had to make a living, so I probably had considerable fear. I started my own wine business. So I would import wines and then go out and sell, do wine tastings, drive around the country and sell wine. So I had a successful wine business. And then it was during this time that I decided to then set up, I started the Gestalt course and was absolutely driven to complete the course. So that went on for 3 years. And then I became a Gestalt psychotherapist alongside being a wine business, whatever. Anyway, so I was doing the two things at the same time. And I had a friend, a doctor friend. He's still a very dear friend. And he was working in a surgery in Norwich. And he wanted to do alternative medicine and not be in the surgery. And I wanted to be in the surgery and putting my skills at work and helping people. I really, really wanted to do that. So anyway, the long and the short, so I was actually the first person to do counselling therapy alongside doctors, and he's gone on to do lots of very interesting work. So I worked alongside doctors, actually working as a therapist sometimes with the doctors, and there was a great deal of trust. And then to see people who'd been under psychiatrists and been with doctors for so long, suddenly, I mean, when I say suddenly, over the course of maybe a few months, actually then owning their rage, owning their feelings, owning their pain, and starting to really heal as human beings, seeing this happen, this was just so exciting. And so I mean, I was working and working and working. I worked for, I don't know, so that I had waiting lists of 3-4 months, I would think, and was very, very busy. And in the meantime, I know that Richard married somebody else and I married somebody else, and we don't dwell on that. I think it was probably important that we did that, and I feel a bit sorry for those people, because they couldn't really, it wouldn't have worked because of the relationship that Richard and I had. So anyway, we tried it and it didn't work. And so we were just still friends. And then I carried on really working very hard, and then too hard, and probably caring too much about other people, at my own expense. And so, in fact, I then, I got chronic fatigue and couldn't afford to not work, but had to. I mean, I was really in a state. I really was in a state. And it was the first time that Richard had seen me probably that vulnerable. And when he saw me so vulnerable, because I could barely walk, instead of this, it's like this morning, I've just swum 30 lengths in a cold swimming pool. I'm always, that I love being active and athletic and all of that side of life. Suddenly I couldn't. So I was very, very miserable about not having my normal amount of energy. So anyway, Richard and I somehow got back together. He was very caring, very lovely to me. And then when we just got back together, I had this, and I don't know how it, I can't really remember. I don't know if I woke up knowing it or if suddenly it happened. Maybe I went to sleep. I know that one day I knew that, I mean, I'd done retreats and things in France that were very successful and very interesting. But I knew that I had to stop working as a Gestalt therapist. I knew that I had to actually, instead of telling or encouraging people to live their dreams, to really trust themselves, to believe in themselves, and I knew that I had to do this for me. Otherwise, I couldn't continue as a therapist, because I would have been an absolute hypocrite. I wouldn't have been real. So I knew this very, you can't see my hands, but this amazingly profound conviction. I knew somehow that I had to go and live on the top of a mountain in the south of France. And I know when I told Richard, he wasn't that happy, I must say, but he said he would come and find this place wherever it was. And so we went to France. We stayed in this particular valley. And I was telling then the woman where we were staying, and she said, "Oh, I know the sort of house. I know exactly the house." And she pointed to this house at the top of the mountain. And I said, "Oh, that's it. I am going to live there." Well, actually, the house belonged to Ian McEwan, the writer. And I didn't know him, but he kindly, after a few chats, he allowed me to live there. And I knew that I had to go through something. And it's about really being alone, really being alone, so that instead, for me, instead of being a wife, instead of being a mother, instead of being a therapist, instead of, it was just, there was nothing. I was on the top of a mountain. I would look down at the clouds, so I felt like I was a bit sort of in heaven. And the first little while, I would say the first month, was so, I was in despair. Every day Richard would phone me very kindly and say, how are you? And I'd sob, I'm so lonely, this is so awful. And Richard would say, come back then. No, I can't. I have to do this. And I remember one day speaking to Ben, my son, and he said, how are you, Mum? I said, the only friend I've got is this fly, and I don't know how long he's going to stay here. So, and people would come from the valley, very friendly, and I would have to say, no, I'm sorry, I'll see you later. I have to do this self-imposed retreat. So I think I was probably considered slightly strange until I went down and had very different meetings with people. But that first, I think, to go into such depth, and when we go into the real depth of being, my experience is it's not this wonderful, beautiful place. We're actually going into the most painful. It's like opening a door and really, really having the courage to go into this very dark, scary place. And the best way I can describe it is that actually, if we are brave enough to go in there, to feel the loneliness, the pain, the desperation, all of that, it's like going into this really dark, horrible cellar. But if we go in and then we take a light, actually we can start examining all the corners and start looking at it, and then feeling, if we can be brave enough to feel the depth of our being, then actually what happens is that one day, and I don't know how that happens, one day, instead of the emptiness, there is the fullness of the being. And that's when I knew, suddenly it was like, oh my goodness, this is, I have to write this. I want other people to understand in the most simple way to understand what it is to be a human being, to have all these feelings that people run away from. They go shopping, they watch telly, they go off with their friends, they do everything to avoid the pain of actually that humanness. And so whatever it was that drove me there, I mean, there were a few times where I just can't stay with this. This is too awful. But I did find the courage. And you have to dig a bit deeper to find everybody does have that courage. And then to be able to write this, I think, very simple little book explaining how we as human beings function.
And all of this magic led to your story, which really is written like a storybook. Almost, even though it's scientific and adult, it almost has a childlike perspective to it, doesn't it?
Well, I believe it's interesting that you say that, and I'm so pleased that you've picked that up, because actually, the nearer we are, and I don't mean when we're driving a car or doing something, you know, adult, but the nearer we can feel to that little child within us, then I believe that's the healthiest that we are. It's like my 4-year-old granddaughter, she'll look at me, and I know that she has a certain depth, even though she's only 4. And she says, we're twins inside, aren't we, Grandma? Yes, we are. I have such an awareness of that child within me. I don't know if you feel that, Victor. When we have that, we can immediately feel our joy of being human. It's the fun, that child lives in the moment. So if we can have that real sense of that little person, it is so magic. So I'm very, very happy to know that you actually did experience that whilst reading the book.
One of your countrymen, a member of the group The Moody Blues, wrote a song with the eyes of a child. Through the eyes of a child, you will come out and see that your world's spinning round, and through life you will be a small part of a whole, of a love that exists. With the eyes of a child, you will see.
Lovely. Absolutely spot on. Yes. Yeah.
And speaking of childlike, your son Ben's illustrations are wonderful. How did he collaborate with you on this?
Well, now I'm going to tell you a really truthful story, because he came to stay with me. He came to stay at the top of this mountain. He came to stay, and it was some months into my being there, and I'd written a lot of the book. And I said to him, we did this, Ben, when you were maybe two or three, you were always drawing, and I would write the story round your drawings. Now it's the other way around. I want you to do the drawing around my story. And he was so he was so annoying. He said, I don't want to read this, Mum. I'll do the drawings happily, but you'll have to just tell me what kind of drawing you want for each page. So he couldn't be bothered to read it. So I said, okay, I'll tell you exactly. And because we're very, very close, he could pick up on it. I know that there was one drawing of the elephant, and I needed a certain expression from the elephant. He got a bit fed up, because I think it was about the fourth time he drew it, and I really it was a certain feeling that drawing had to absolutely portray, and I know that he got it. So each page, I mean, he does his drawings, I think, are very lovely. And his daughter now she's a very good little artist as well.
That's wonderful. For our listeners who haven't seen the book yet, she's referring to a drawing of an elephant that as a baby had its leg tied to a stake and couldn't pull away and couldn't escape. And when it grew up to be an adult elephant, realized, or had programmed in itself, rather, that the stake was still there, and saw the rope, and even though had the strength to pull away, couldn't pull away. And it's a wonderful parable.
Yeah, I mean, it really symbolizes, I think, a lot of people can identify with that. It's like, well, you're big and strong now, for heaven's sake. What are you like inside then? And that damage from those early years, I mean, has a huge, huge effect. And then something else, I know I wanted to just, you haven't asked me, but I hope it's right just to tell you this. I had a musician friend who came to the Bergerie, and he stayed for a month, and I knew that he was writing all this music. And when it came to I was writing all these words, but I felt I was being given the words for the CD. And anyway, so I was writing all the words. When it came to the end of the month, I said, I've been given all these words, Neil. I don't really know what I'm going to do with it. And he said, well, I've been writing music. And I said, yes, I know. And he said, no, Alison, I've been writing music for you. So we decided, oh, wow, we put the music and the words together. When we came back, so then I'm living with Richard and want to record this CD. And actually, where we were living then, over the house, there was the RAF aeroplanes flying over. So I phoned RAF Coltishall and said, excuse me, and whoever it was that I was speaking to, the top guy, never met him. And I explained that I'd been to France, that I had this conviction, that I'd written this book, and then I made this beautiful CD, and that the aeroplanes were... I couldn't possibly do a meditation CD with aeroplanes flying over. And it was extraordinary. This is what I mean about, you mentioned about synchronicities, those kind of miracles. This amazing man said, Alison, tell me what day, tell me what time, and I will make sure that during that time there will be not one aeroplane flying over your house. Mm. And he did.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Wonderful. My guest is Alice. I'm crying thinking about that synchronicity. It's just tears are coming to my eyes, tears of joy. My guest is Allison Wharton. She's the author of Your Story, and we'll be back with more of Allison after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human. And she's got this little toy she's always playing with, all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Learn more at She Can STEM, a message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Allison Wharton. She's the author of the book, Your Story. Allison, what are some of the key points that you share in the book?
I think for most people to understand, I would love for people to understand how we function. So some people will maybe be aware of their intellect. Some people will be aware of their physicality. It's about the whole being, how we function the whole being. And so that was very important to describe that. And then the acceptance, for people to accept who they are without needing somebody else's approval, to encourage somebody to have the belief in themselves to be who they truly are, even if it means stepping out of line with maybe friends and family, to have the courage to be truly, truly who you are. And I know as a therapist and as a friend, the moment that any one of us feels scene, the moment that happens, then a healing begins. And I would say that so many of us need healing. So many of us. It starts with just accepting how we are right now. So the drawings, Ben's beautiful drawings, I hope illustrate so that you can actually see it in a second what the writing is saying. And the writing is, instead of going into a really heavy textbook, yes, of course, they have their place and they're wonderful. But to understand who we are, it's like I've worked with very clever professors, all sorts of interesting, clever people. And those people will often live in their head. I wanted something that actually touches people's hearts. So I wanted the book to not ignore the head, because it's obviously very valuable, but to touch somebody in their heart so that it clicks straight away. It makes sense, so that it all comes together. And a simple book to explain how we function. That's emotionally, physically, intellectually, the whole thing. So, and then to put in some of Freud, some of Carl Jung, just to put it in a very simple way, instead of laboriously having to trek through stuff which even then at the end of it you might not understand. It was like to encourage people to look at themselves, to want to heal themselves, and to grow. We all need to grow. If we are growing, there is such an energy, such an excitement in our living, whereas if we're not growing, there's a sort of, well, there's a stagnation, and that's a very dull, stuck energy, and that leads to all sorts of illnesses. So yeah, to keep that energy flowing and alive, I hope that came over in the book. And the CD too, actually, to allow somebody to have everything wash over their brains, to go into a visualization, and to help that person remember who they really are. It's that. Sometimes we can be so busy in our lives, we forget who we are. And I think, especially now, we need to remind ourselves of the very precious being that we are. Life is so precious.
Absolutely. You mentioned that wonderful meditation CD which comes with it. Meditation is a very important practice, isn't it?
I mean, but really, and if I tell you that every morning now I'm swimming in a freezing cold pool, I don't know that I would really encourage that. You've got to be a bit nutty. And Richard is cycling every morning. And now he and I, actually, I'm so proud of him. We do a little yoga together and we will actually meditate together. So I've meditated for many, many years. And I think it's, instead of listening to this busy, 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 busy brain, to actually just focus on your breath, not making you right or wrong, just to be.
Absolutely.
Meditation is profoundly healing. It's just, it is such, and it's, yeah, I mean, it's something that we need to learn to just be in this moment, in the now. That's really, that's the beauty of meditation. Accepting.
Absolutely. Now we're going to catch our listeners up on your relationship with Richard, because in the beginning you had mentioned the divorce, you had mentioned that you had stayed friends and supported each other through the years, but your personal story has a very happy ending that, as I mentioned, my wife, Lori Sue, would refer to as a seasoned romance. Please tell us what happened.
Well, when I then left France, I went back to live in Richard's house, which I immediately put on the market because I didn't want to live in just his house. I wanted our house. So we then bought our house together and we moved a couple of times. And then we had horses, and he'd asked me, I don't know how many times, very sweetly, come on, darling, marry me. No, no. no, no. I was adamant, no, 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 no. So he asked me, I don't know how many times. And then we were out on our horses one day. I fell. I broke so many ribs and I was in my bed and so miserable. I hated just hurting. And I thought, how can I change all this? I know, I'll say yes and we'll be married on the beach in Barbados. So that's what we did. We then went to Barbados and married there. So yes, it did have a very, very lovely second installment to our lives, I would say.
And they lived happily ever after, as they say in the storybooks. That's such a wonderful story, and also something that for many of our listeners, that there is hope for finding love again or reuniting with love again, even in our later years, which my wife and I have experienced, which Allison and Richard have experienced. So never close your heart. Keep it open, and the possibilities are always there. What would you offer to those of us who are experiencing the dramatic and drastic changes that have resulted from the COVID-19 pandemic?
Something very, very important that I've been practicing. And it's so easy. You can sit in a moment and you can feel fear tingling all through your body. And it has such a stressful impact on our bodies. And the moment that we feel that, it's then about actually saying, all right, that is, it's fear. I acknowledge that. But that's not who I am. I'm feeling it. I'm not going to deny it. And now I'm actually going to focus. So it's about focusing on every single thing that we are grateful for. And the moment I focus, the moment that we focus on anything that we're grateful for, that we're appreciative of, our bodies fill with this other hormone, which is so, so good for our bodies and our minds. So it's about just having the awareness, not to make your fear wrong. Otherwise, you're giving yourself a double whammy. You don't want to beat yourself up for being fearful. It's like, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. Now I'm going to breathe, let it go. And now look at this that I'm grateful for. Look at this. Look at all of this in my body that's working. Look at all of this, all these people who love me. Look at the sky. Look at the flower. Look at anything at all. And really just feel it in your heart and say thank you. Thank you for absolutely all of this. And our breathing changes and our bodies change the hormone that we're actually producing.
Absolutely. As Brian Tracy once said, we cannot control what happens to us, but we can control our response to it.
Yes. Yes. I like it.
What lessons may we learn from our current world state?
I think that there's something about the whole world maybe uniting, the whole world uniting. And I think it's about probably going within instead of, we've been so busy going out there to get our happiness and fulfillment. And in fact, to be happy within yourself. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes courage and patience and love to accept ourselves for exactly, who is it? Carl Jung said, only when I accept myself exactly as I am, only then can I grow. So it's not an easy one. I think it's really saying about everybody is being challenged, everybody. And if we can then acknowledge that other people, we have so, so much love to give. And love is the greatest energy of all, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. What would you like readers to take away from your story?
I hope it touches people in their hearts. I hope it helps people to grow. The biggest thing is probably to understand. I mean, it's difficult to accept yourself if you don't understand what's going on. So I know that if somebody's really, really angry, then lots of people will probably believe that it's really awful and wrong. Well, actually, anger is a huge energy. Let's actually then channel that anger into something really positive. So every single feeling, I believe, we have to honor. I really believe that we have to honor. And if we can release some of those feelings instead of holding them in the body, then the body can really heal. I think it's about being authentic. And sometimes when we don't know something, it's all right not to know. It's just accepting who we are. The first person that we have to learn to love is this person, is who we are. We want somebody else to love us, but actually that person is simply our mirror. They're just reminding us of the part of us that we don't yet love. Mm. So, yeah, I think that.
Sage wisdom from my guest, Allison Warden. She's the author of Your Story. Allison, one more time, please tell listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Thank you so much, Victor. If you go to AllisonWarden.com, that's the website, and then it's all on there about how to order the book.
Wonderful. Allison, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story of not only this wonderful work, but hope and love and magic.
Victor, may I say thank you so much. And you are rare. It's your depth and your sincerity touch me deeply. So sincere love to you and to your wife to everybody.
Thank you so much. And thank you. And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.